This talk was given at Insight Meditation South Bay. For more information and a schedule of our events, visit the Insight Meditation South Bay website at www.imsb.org. For information about online programs, visit the Bodhi Courses website at www.bodhicourses.org. Bodhi is spelled B-O-D-H-I.
Thank you. So I am in planning to lead a guided meditation to start with, and then do a 15-minute talk, then break out into small groups to reflect, and then we'll come back together again and we'll talk about some practices, and you can share and your experiences with generosity and with scarcity, because the topic tonight is from scarcity to generosity. So for starting with a sit, I will be first bringing us into our body, and then we'll start exploring our comparing mind, and then sit in silence. So I invite you to feel comfortable with the sit any way that you prefer. If you want to turn off your screen, or if you want to turn off the volume, that's fine with me. And I'll just kind of lead along, and you can join me if you feel comfortable. So I like to start with getting oriented to my environment around, and that I invite you to just look away from your screen and take in the space, maybe even going as far as to look behind you. And it's a soft gaze, just kind of letting your body feel comfortable and safe in your environment, right here, right now. And then if you land your eyes, kind of, it's often most comfortable to be looking right in front. And if you feel comfortable, you can shut your eyes, or you can just leave them as a soft gaze. And then we'll bring our attention to our internal environment, starting with the contact of our feet with the ground. Maybe noticing the softness of the soles of your feet with the firmness of the shoes and the floor beneath you, and then the earth under that. And feeling supported, grounded here, connecting to the earth. Move your attention from your feet to your sits bones, where you're in contact with the cushion beneath you. Maybe feeling the heaviness, the density of your body, just resting in the soft cushion or the chair. Then bringing your attention to your upright posture, to your spine, the inviting dignity and alertness. Moving your attention to the front of your body. And here, seeing if you can invite openness and receptivity. Then move your attention to your head, noticing your eyes and your cheeks and your jaw. See if you can just soften a little bit. Not forcing relaxation, but just inviting. Ease and gentleness in the body. And then we'll scan our body from our head down our neck to our shoulders, our upper arm, lower arm and hands. Seeing if there's any tightness that's still lingering. Maybe when you bring your attention to it, it naturally eases. Moving your awareness from shoulders to your upper back, your lower back, your sit bones and your upper legs, your lower legs, and then returning to our feet. Again, establishing a connection with the earth beneath us and feeling supported. And then just taking in our entire body. Inviting alertness, openness, relaxation. Drawing our attention to our breath. Allowing our body just to breathe naturally. Knowing that we don't have to control our breath. Just being with what's here now. Non-judgmentally. With kindness and acceptance. And now we'll start to explore our comparing mind and how different words are felt in our body. I will repeat a set of words three times. It's about a dozen words and will be about 5 minutes long. And just allow the words to fall on your body. Notice if there's a pleasantness or an unpleasantness, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Just being with your body and feeling if there's a constriction or maybe there's an expansion. Just letting the words land. Scarcity. 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 Generosity. 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 Sufficiency. 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 Poverty. 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 Prosperity. 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 enoughness. 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 Poor. 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 Rich. 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 Content. 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 Stinginess. 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 Extravagance. 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 Satisfaction. 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 Lack. 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 Abundance. 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 Balance. 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 Now we'll remain in silence for the next 10 minutes. And at 7 o'clock, I'll ring the bell to end our formal sit. And we'll proceed into the talk. So I invite you to do whatever style of meditation you feel comfortable and that is speaking to you right now. So if your eyes were closed, I invite you to open them again. If you turned your recording off, you can do whatever feels most comfortable. And I will move into my formal talk now. This evening, we will explore the ideas of scarcity and generosity. I will use the framework of comparisons, scarcity versus generosity, Buddhism versus economics, to better understand our suffering around personal finances. Hopefully, we will all find increased peace somewhere in the middle of these extremes. Before I start my formal talk, I want to acknowledge I have cultural biases that I bring to any topic. I want to explicitly state that I am a white, Western heterosexual who identifies as female and is able-bodied and financially secure. It is my intention to present this material for a wide audience. However, I do not know what I do not know. I welcome any feedback you care to give me on both content and approach, because there will be time at the end for comments. I am sitting on Chumash land. In this talk, I primarily start with Buddhist teachings, then move to modern teachings from behavioral economics with a little weaving back and forth and in between. So let's start with what Buddhism has to say big picture wise. I personally like the saying that the Buddha taught suffering and the end of suffering because it feels reassuring and valuable to me, and it is short and easy to remember. But life is complicated. This talk is about how to use our relationship to money to implement this basic aspiration to ease suffering. Sticking with the aspiration idea, allow me to first read a sutta titled Accomplishments. And this is from the Numbered Discourses 8, which was posted in the link, but you don't have to read all of it. I'm just going to read a part of it. So mendicants, there are these 8 accomplishments. What 8? Accomplishment and initiative, protection, good friendship, and balanced finances. And accomplishment in faith, ethics, generosity, and wisdom. These are the 8 accomplishments. They're enterprising in the workplace, diligent in managing finances. They balance their finances and preserve their wealth. Faithful, accomplished in ethics, kind, rid of stinginess, they always purify the path to well-being in lives to come. And so these 8 qualities of a faithful householder are declared by the one who is truly named to lead to happiness in both spheres, welfare and benefit in this life, and happiness in lives to come. This is how, for a householder, merit grows into generosity. So I'd like to focus in on 3 points. The first one being who is addressed, the audience of this particular sutta, balanced finances, and then the role of generosity. So let's start with the first point, householder versus monks. This teaching is special because here in America in the 21st century, it is more common to see suttas addressed to monks. As Bhikkhu Bosnagoda Rahula writes in his respected book, The Buddha's Teachings on Prosperity at Home, at Work, and in the World, the passage of 26 centuries has obscured the Buddha's teachings for the lay community. And often what reference can be found makes these teachings seem insignificant or present them in a way that can be misleading. So this makes sense to me. Is an oral tradition that's been preserved from monks by monks for 2,000 and over years. Bhikkhu Rahula also writes that the Buddha's view of prosperity stand out as one of the most misinterpreted aspects of his teachings. Many writers have either stated or implied that the Buddha did not encourage people to prosper and become wealthy. This misinterpretation influenced some to believe that achieving prosperity goes against the Buddha's teachings. So I don't know about all of Buddhists in America, convert Buddhists, but I can speak for myself. And that I do know that from my personal experience, I agree. I was first formally introduced to Buddhism by attending a 25-day Vipassana retreat for lay people at a Thai monastic setting in Chiang Mai, Thailand. Back in 1991, I spent my junior year of university doing an independent study project on the physiological effects of meditation while earning double degrees in Southeast Asian studies and economics. I like to say that I have been trying to reconcile these two seemingly contradictory ideologies for the better part of my life. And this talk is a yet another step in the process. So I have come to realize that because I learned how to meditate in a temple, I had incorporated the belief that liberation from suffering required complete renunciation of money. Basically, I set myself up for failure as a layperson. I, as a householder, was comparing myself to monks, and I would always feel greedy. So let's move to the second point about balanced finances, which brings in the day-to-day aspects of making and spending money. I will again turn to Bhikkhu Rahula for a concise summary of the Buddha's teachings. Bhikkhu Rahula writes, first, one must follow certain guidelines in endeavoring to become prosperous. Second, one must use wealth properly. So guidelines for the first part about becoming prosperous are important enough to be one of the Noble Eightfold Path, namely right livelihood. And in brief, right livelihood encourages disciples to make their living in ways that do not cause harm. However, I want to spend more time discussing the second part about using wealth, because I don't think this teaching gets as much attention as right livelihood. It is my belief that American society can benefit from healthy conversations around personal finances. I believe talking honestly about money will lead to a better world. Fresh, supportive conversations about money will hopefully open the door to increasing our understanding of unexamined personal earnings and spending habits. As with mindfulness, awareness with kindness will lead to a healthier perspective, one where we feel secure enough to share our resources instead of exploiting and hoarding. This is the message the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago. I am not inventing anything new. I am simply applying mindfulness to personal finances as a way to make wiser financial decisions. So I want to tell you what balanced finances means in the Buddha's words. The Accomplishment Sutta also states that knowing their income and expenditure balances their finances, being neither too extravagant nor frugal, they think, in this way, my income will exceed my expenditure, not the reverse. If a gentleman has little income, but an opulent life, people will say, this gentleman eats their wealth like a fig eater. If a gentleman has a large income, but a Spartan life, people will say, this gentleman is starving themselves to death. So basically, balanced finances is an example of the middle way. Now let's move to the third and final point I highlighted in the Accomplishment Sutta, namely generosity. Generosity is not the end point in Buddhism. It is more of the starting point. Generosity is one of the three meritorious deeds that support our full humanity, the other two deeds being virtue, sila in Pali, and mental development, or bhavana in Pali. Generosity is so much more than donating money. Generosity involves acts of non-monetary kindness and love. Giving your time and genuinely listening to others are generous acts. Smiling and wearing masks. Unfortunately, my personal Western educational training has reinforced my focus on money, but I'm working on expanding my limiting views by studying behavioral economics. So I don't want to lose anyone here by using the term behavioral economics. In simple terms, economics is the big picture about who gets money, when, where, and why. Behavioral economics is how the individual fits into that big system and how they make financial decisions. But before I shift to focusing on behavioral economics, let me mention again the title of my talk is From Scarcity to Generosity. In essence, generosity is the basic behavior that underlines Buddhism, and scarcity is the basic problem that gives rise to economics. So my old definition from classical economics that I taught to American and Russian university students in introductory economic courses is that economics is the study of how society allocates its scarce resources. Back in my 20s and 30s, I thought this definition was unbiased and factual. I now understand how my life and modern culture is skewed towards scarcity. The notion that resources are scarce is based on the problematic belief that there is a limited supply of things, like food and water, to meet everyone's demands. The idea of limited resources is troubling. It doesn't consider sharing and voluntary reduction of consumption. It sets up a win-lose environment versus a win-win. Generosity is a win-win interaction. Both the giver and the receiver are benefited. So let's shift to people's relationships with money from the behavioral economic perspective. For this, I will rely on Dan Ariely's and Jeff Kressler's 2017 book titled Dollars and Cents, How We Misthink Money and How to Spend Smarter. Dan concludes in his book that we misthink money because our financial brains overemphasize irrelevant factors, forget about important ones, and allow insignificant value clues to lead us astray. He also concludes that when it comes to making financial decisions, what should matter are opportunity costs, the true benefit a purchase provides, and the real pleasure we receive from it compared to other ways we could spend money. His book also investigates intriguing unconscious behaviors around mental accounting, the pain of paying, anchoring, relativity, endowment effects, loss aversion, fairness and effort, present versus future, language, ritual, and expectations. And if any of these topics interest you as much as they do me, I recommend that you read his book, which I have included in the resource list that will be available online. So although most of these topics I just mentioned from behavioral economics overlap with Buddhist teachings, during our short time together this evening, I only want to discuss two topics from Dan's book, opportunity cost and value. But first, did anyone notice the similarities between Dan's three broad conclusions about the failings of the financial brain and the three poisons in the Buddha's second noble truth? Firstly, overemphasizing irrelevant factors feels a lot like greed to me. Secondly, forgetting about important ones feels like aversion. And thirdly, allowing insignificant value clues to lead us astray feels a lot like delusion to me. However, Dan's advice for what we should do doesn't follow so closely to the Buddha's fourth noble truth, although I do think they complement each other nicely. Allow me to repeat Dan's recommendations. When it comes to making financial decisions, what should matter are opportunity costs, the true benefit a purchase provides, and the real pleasure we receive from it compared to other ways we should spend money. So let's look at opportunity costs. And let's make it simple. Opportunity cost considers alternative actions. So let's use an example from Buddhism to get a better understanding of opportunity costs. Specifically, let's consider the four exertions related to right effort. Practicing right effort entails actions of guarding the sense and abandoning the defilements, while also developing enlightenment factors and maintaining concentration. Or in an even more simplified framework, abandon the unskillful and develop the skillful. So I know I am oversimplifying these rich and rewarding teachings. I just hope to get a better understanding of opportunity cost so we can apply it to our spending habits. To give an example from personal finance, this process not only involves being aware of what is on the shelves in the store, but also what is available outside of the store. So basically, this is considering both the skillful and the unskillful alternatives. Slowing down and considering opportunity cost in our purchases allows us to not only be more aware of our purchase, but also to establish value. A lot has been written about value from economists and non-economists alike. Value and merit are synonyms in modern English. And delving into merit from a Buddhist perspective can take us into the realms of karma, rebirth, and nirvana. So for our purposes, let's confine our use of value to the notion that it should reflect what we are willing to give up to get in return. In an act of giving, we're aligning ourselves with certain values. We develop love, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. We let go of grasping, aversion, and delusion in a single act of giving. So I've covered a lot of ideas along with definitions, and I think it would be useful to pause and reflect a little before we move to the practices that encourage generosity. So let's move into small groups of inquiry for about 15 minutes, and then return for sharing and a discussion of practical ways to move from scarcity to generosity. So here are some questions to discuss. When and how do you feel scarcity? How do you feel generosity? So this refers back to our guided meditation. And then from my talk, what is your understanding or experience with opportunity cost and value? In general, how would you compare Buddhism and economics and or behavioral economics? So to recap, how does scarcity feel to you? How does generosity feel? How do you understand opportunity cost and value? How do you compare Buddhism and economics? And I'm looking forward to hearing what you guys have to share afterwards. So starting like in the big picture that reflect upon your intention, just do you see wealth as an end in itself or as a means to greater happiness for ourselves and the world around us? And then we can take that intention and move to more mindfulness and just direct our mindfulness to our financial transactions. So you can take a moment to notice how you feel when money comes in and when money goes out. So this is back to our guided meditation of, does your body feel constricted or relaxed? And then in this digital age, it's not always as easy as getting a check that you deposit in a bank, nor giving a dollar bill to a cashier at a store, because we do live in an electronic money transfer and credit card age. But if we slow down, we can actually still use these as mindful moments for reflection. So you can just pause and, you know, find out, are you in a place of scarcity or are you feeling generous? Another possibility is just being open to talking about money. And I know that it feels like in American culture that we're not really able to engage in open conversations, not only about money, there's also the racial and the climate injustice. However, we have to begin somewhere. So I want to thank you for your participation in this talk tonight, because I feel like this is already a wonderful start and that I believe our good intentions have value. So if talking about money feels far away, because I know that that's kind of more of an extroverted orientation, so maybe if it's more introverted, that you can start with a generosity journal. So this is a variation on a gratitude journal, which I suspect all of you have heard about the positive benefits of establishing a daily habit of writing down or just even mentally reviewing before you go to bed at night, specific things that you are grateful for in your day. And that I don't know of any research studies that it looked at generosity journaling versus gratitude journaling. Although I took on the practice of generosity journaling for the month of May, that I had already have a gratitude journal practice, and that I found generosity reflection to have a slightly different feel. That I think that I struggle with feelings of stinginess, and that journaling about generosity actually showed me that I may be judging myself too narrowly and harshly, that identifying my generous actions did not come as easily as recording gratitude. However, it did get easier with practice, which is just a reminder that all of these are practices. So the first four that I mentioned, you know, can be done informally in your daily life. And the fifth and final example is a way to incorporate more generosity into our formal sitting sessions. And here, I would like to reference Shaila's book, Wisdom Wide and Deep, which provides a wonderful meditation instruction titled Reflection on Virtue and Generosity. She writes that you might explore reflective practices with the combined contemplation of virtue and generosity. First, reflect on the spiritual potency of these qualities in general. Consider the benefits associated with virtuous deeds or generous acts. Second, think of specific virtuous deeds or generous actions that you have personally performed and allow attention to dwell on these thoughts. Third, sense that virtue supports your attention, providing a current of joyful, wholesome energy that upholds consciousness, making your mind worthy of the happiness of concentration. Sustain the contemplation, repeatedly turning virtuous and generous thoughts over in your mind to massage away underlying feelings of doubt, trepidation, and stinginess.